Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the capture of the Mexican drug lord El Chapo Shorty Guzman in a luxury hotel in the tourist resort of Mazatlan. Mexico City-based journalist Joan Grillo, the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency, joins us to discuss the role of Mexican Marines in recapturing the fugitive drug lord who Forbes magazine has named number 67 on its list of the world's most powerful people, and what role U.S. intelligence might have played in nabbing Chicago's public enemy number one. Then we will speak with the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Stephen Pfeiffer, who is now director of the Brookings Institution's Arms Control Initiative, where he focuses on arms control, Ukraine, and Russian issues. We will discuss the sudden collapse of the kleptocratic Yanukovych regime and what might follow it to fill the political vacuum, as well as who might pony up to help the almost bankrupt country recover now that Russia's $15 billion loan is likely to be put on hold as the spoiler Putin decides his next move now that his puppet has fled his palace. Then finally, we will speak with the Ukrainian scholar Mykola Rabchuk, a senior research fellow at the Ukrainian Center for Cultural Studies in Kiev and co-founder and member of the editorial board of Kritika, a leading Ukrainian intellectual magazine. We will discuss the future of a divided country that has just undergone its third post-Soviet revolution and whether another kleptocrat, Yulia Tymoshenko, who was just released from prison, will fill the void or whether the country could be rebooted in a less corrupt and more lawful direction. And joining us now is Joan Grillo, who has covered Latin America since 2001 for international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, and the Sunday Telegraph. Based in Mexico City, he has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador. His latest book is El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joan Grillo.
Good to be here.
And obviously the capture of El Chapo Shorty Guzman is a big deal. My understanding is I spoke with Tim Johnson last week about the Three Amigos conference, where the North American summit in Toluca, Mexico, where the three presidents of Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. Met. Tim was telling me that they were hoping to nail somebody, at least Peña Nieto was hoping to nail somebody to go along with the summits, and there was a lot of activity going on in Sinaloa. So little did we know. I guess they captured him a few days later, right?
Well, there was various operations of Marines storming into houses in Culiacán close to the time of the summit. So people made presumptions, are they trying to arrest somebody as the Americans visit. Now, historically, there has often been a case when the Mexican authorities will nab a drug trafficker and parade him in front of the media when the U.S. does come to kind of show, yeah, hey, look, we're fighting the war on drugs. However, with an arrest of this magnitude of Chapo Guzman with a $5 million price on his head, as one former head of international operations for the DEA said to me, he thinks the most important drug trafficker in the world. Another Mexican intelligence official said to me, this is not an arrest you can time. It just happened to really be around the time of the Obama visit. You can't control forces that much. People often have a very conspiratorial idea of Mexican government here, and understandably, there was a one-party rule for 71 years. A lot of the time, the rulers themselves were conspiratorial people. But that was the idea they can pull all the strings. But really, realistically, in a case like this, they can't control the timing. They were pushing it for a long time, and it happened to happen. Right now, the arrest of Chapo Guzman.
So, Joan Grillo, tell me how it happened from your investigation.
Well, the information I have is that there was some raids in Culiacán by the Mexican Marines during the week, and they raided several houses, including one of an ex-wife of Chapo Guzman, a woman called Griselda Lopez. They also raided other there of some security, cartel security people, gunmen who work for the cartel. And in one of these houses, they found some tunnels that Chapo Guzman was using to go into the house and then go out again to other places. They did a tunnel system under Culiacán. Now, Culiacán is the state capital of Sinaloa. Sinaloa is to the Mexican cartels, as Sicily is to the Italian mafia. or the Sicilian mafia. It is the cradle of drug cartels. So on this information, they discovered, they actually found they were very close to him. He'd been in one of his houses very recently. And apparently he made a phone call on a satellite phone, calling for somebody to help him to get him out of Culiacan. And they traced that call and followed him from Culiacan to the nearby seaside resort of Mazatlan, where he went to a luxury seaside apartment with a woman. And they had him cornered there. They went in with the Mexican Marines, and without a shot being fired, arrested him.
So he has been active for an awful long time. I mean, and of course he was captured and held in a maximum security jail and miraculously escaped, obviously with some help from the inside. And there have been other near captures, haven't they?
There have been many times that we've had news coming, you know, like this, like Chapo Guzman's been captured or Chapo Guzman's been killed. So when the news first broke, the journalists who covered this a lot, you know, took a breath for a moment, see if it was really the case or yet another false alarm. You know, you have many times about 2 years ago in Baja California Sur, in Los Cabos Resort, they said they almost had him. You know, he was going to be there and they missed him. Then we suddenly had a report about a year ago of he was killed in Guatemala in a shootout. So there's kind of a lot of rumors around. But in this case, you know, it seems to be the one that they did have him. Yeah, it has been a long time. It's been 13 years since he escaped from a Mexican prison. He was originally arrested back in 94 and then held for until 2001 when he escaped under then-President Vicente Fox. He survived the whole of the Fox presidency, the Felipe Calderón presidency, despite a military offensive against drug cartels. And under Peña Nieto, he has been captured.
So what about his sons, Ivan Archivaldo Guzman Salazar and Ovidio Guzman Lopez, and also Guzman's father-in-law, Inez Coronel? He was arrested nearly a year ago. Have they been leaning on the family?
They certainly would have been leaning on anybody they had arrested to give up information, but Chapo Guzman was a very clever, sophisticated trafficker, and he had ways, the reason he survived for so long was he had kind of ways of need to know stuff, so I think those people who'd been arrested would be kept from having information that would be liable to give him away. But all the time, the way that the drug enforcement works is by arresting people and getting them to snitch on other people, leaning on them and putting pressure or paying them large amounts of money. And the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration pays rewards up to $5 million. It had a $5 million reward on Chapo Guzman, which means somebody could be claiming that for giving information leading to that arrest and obviously making themselves a millionaire by giving that there. They have ways. Also, they have also technology as well in terms of phone taps. Now, he was very clever about, you know, wouldn't use a regular cell phone. They'd have quite sophisticated communications. But then again, there's now been quite a sophisticated way of tracing those communications. So kind of a spy back and forth war.
Again, I'm speaking with Juan Grillo, who has covered Latin America since 2001 for international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, and the Sunday Telegraph. Based in Mexico City, he has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador. His latest book is El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. So I have been talking to people recently, including Jeremy Scahill, who wrote the book Dirty Wars and the movie of that same title, Dirty Wars. It's up for the Academy Award this year as Best Documentary Feature. And he just mentioned that he's with this new media venture that's financed by the eBay billionaire, along with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras. And he was saying that there's a lot of Joint Special Operations Command, the people who got bin Laden, that they've been active in Mexico and that was a story that he was following. Do you have any evidence that U.S. intelligence assets or boots on the ground in Mexico were involved with this capture of Guzman?
I'd be interested to hear what he has from his investigation. The U.S., I followed for a long time the DEA operations in Mexico. And also there's been the CIA have been here as well, and there was a case about a year and a half ago, members of the CIA being attacked and shot at in Mexico by, probably by, in fact, the rival of Chapo Guzman. But Normally, the DA operations are more about them paying informants, let's say, paying big amounts of money. And also, they have ways of kind of setting up infiltrating drug cartels. I've interviewed DA agents who have infiltrated the cartels by pretending to be drug traffickers themselves. And it's kind of more gaining human intelligence. In terms of more of the kind of spy technology referred to that, things like drones, things like tracing equipment, this is very possible. There's been one thing there has been in this administration is a bit less real-time communication. That was considered a big deal when Peña Nieto first came in. He started to slow down the kind of communication between U.S. agencies and Mexican agencies. And so this should kind of go through formal channels rather than everybody talking to each other on the ground and kind of going back and forth. But, you know, it's hard to know. You know, it's very possible there was some more shared information there. There was definitely, you'll see, some level of U.S. involvement. I talked to one official who's quite close both to the Mexican Marines and the U.S. intelligence community, who he believed that this is largely, the credit was largely the Mexicans in this particular bus, that they, it was their intelligence on the ground and there was some U.S. involvement. But, you know, we'll have to wait for all the evidence to come out, and like, I'll be interested to hear what evidence he's found himself.
Well, just to touch on the history of Guzman, of how long he's been operating, I recall that in the early 1980s, when the Ariana Felix organization out of Tijuana went to Guadalajara to try and kill Chapo Guzman, they sent their hit team down there. They actually hired a street gang from San Diego to do the hit, and they couldn't find him. So they go back to the airport to catch the plane back to Tijuana, and then they run into Chapo Guzman's people in the airport at Guadalajara, and a huge shootout ensues, and they assassinate the papal nuncio from the Vatican, mistaking him for El Chapo Guzman, who dressed in you know, disguised as a cardinal or whatever. And that got a lot of international attention. So this has been going on for an awful long time.
Yeah, it certainly has. Chapo Guzman is from this community in Padre Huato, Sinaloa. It's a mountainous community on the Sierra Madre Occidental where people have actually been growing drugs and trafficking drugs for 100 years. Right back when the United States first made opium or restricted opium under the Harrison's Narcotics Tax Act of 1914, there was a trade from Sinaloa State to the U.S. And so the community where Chapo Guzman was born, a small village called La Tuna in this Padre Huato municipality, was already a drug trafficking community back then in the 1950s. They used to call the opium people who beat opium gummers because of the opium gum. And even the local baseball team was known as the Gummers because of the association with opium and this part of Sinaloa State. So he was born there in this place, born into a trafficking community, grew up under various traffickers in the 1980s, as you say, and then was caught in this beef with the Ariana Felix cartel. Now, following that, there was pressure on the Mexican government then to arrest traffickers. So they got Chapo Guzman in 94 in Guatemala. He was put into a prison and then escaped from there in 2001. Now, since 2001, he really came forward as this major kingpin, the biggest drug trafficker, the person who tried to claim the entire 2,000-mile Mexican border. He wanted to traffic his drugs through Tijuana, through Juarez, and through the northeast, through Nuevo Laredo, and fought a whole series of turf wars with other cartels. And that was part of this catastrophic cycle of violence. The 70,000 people who have been killed in the cartel-related violence since 2006.
So he has clearly built this massive empire going, you know, back from when he started in the 80s and accidentally shot the papal nuncio. Or he didn't do it, but the AFO people did, trying to get him, the street gang from San Diego, who, by the way, were able to board the plane, Aeromexico plane, in first class with their machine guns still smoking and fly back to Tijuana and cross the border back into the United States. I mean, the whole thing was pretty brazen, but it did create an international incident. But I guess since then, though, he's made a fortune. Forbes magazine have indicated he's one of the richest, if not the richest, drug trafficker in the world. And he seems to have a lot of connections to Chicago, which is where the U.S. would like to put him on trial.
Yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of places who would love to put Chappell Guzman on trial. He's got indictments for him in Chicago, but also indictments for him in San Diego and in New York. But in Chicago, where they really made a big case, where the big City Crime Commission named him public enemy number one, the first person to be named that since Al Capone. There was a case there in Chicago against the Sinaloa cartel, where they say, you know, they said it was making absolutely billions, moving the drugs from the Mexican border in trailer trucks up there, using Chicago as a big hub to supply the whole eastern seaboard up into Canada, a whole bunch of cities from there. An ongoing case that they've been extradited to Chicago, the son of another associate of Chappell Guzman called Ismael Miles Zambada. His son has already been extradited up to Chicago, and they have a couple of American-born twins who also they were working with the Sinaloa cartels from there. They were son of another drug trafficker from the Sinaloa Durango area, and they're involved in that case. Well, it's a very, very big ongoing case. They'd love to have him there. But so in other places, but then Chappell Guzman's lawyers will try to fight to keep him in Mexico. It seems convenient, perhaps, for the Mexican authorities for him to be extradited, so they don't have the responsibility anymore of keeping him in prison. You know, obviously, we've seen the history that he's escaped from a prison before, and there's been a whole bunch of prison escapes, some quite incredible prison escapes in recent years, some involving more than 100 prisoners, sometimes supported by helicopters. So it could be convenient for him to be flown up to the U.S., where he wouldn't, you know, see daylight for a long time.
So it's not out of the question, then, that he could get extradited to face trial in Chicago, then. It's a terrible admission for the Mexican authorities that their prisons are so porous.
Yep. That's correct. It's a big problem here with law enforcement. The prison systems themselves have been overwhelmed in recent years. When you've arrested tens and thousands of drug traffickers, of hired killers, and there really hasn't been much space for them. So there's been a very violent environment in the prisons as well. A lot of people murdered and riots. They have these special high security prisons where Chappell Guzman is now. He's in the number one high security prison. The army is around it. So really a prison escape is extremely difficult, hard to imagine. But still, if he was in Mexico, the pressure would be there for years and years, always the pressure of knowing he's there, of knowing he'd like to escape, of knowing he has billions of dollars at his resources and many people who answer to his calls, who carry out killings at his call. So it could be a solution for Mexican government simply to extradite him.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Joan Grillo.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Joan Grillo, who has covered Latin America since 2001 for international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, and the Sunday Telegraph. Based in Mexico City, has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador. His latest book is El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine.